Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Today marks the 50th anniversary of the killing of Kitty Genovese. Kitty's death is considered one of the 20th century's most sensational true crime stories. It even sparked a new sociological theory, the bystander effect, now a mainstay of psychology textbooks. In his new book, Kitty Genovese, award-winning author and journalist Kevin Cook takes readers back not only to the night in question, March 13, 1964 in New York, but to the cultural landscape and historic aftermath of the notorious murder. It was a crime that changed history forever. In fact, public outrage from it inspired criminal justice reforms and the 911 emergency response system. Again, the name of the book is Kitty Genovese, The Murder, The Bystanders, The Crime That Changed America. It is published by Norton, and it's a pleasure to welcome Kevin Cook to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
What brought you to this crime and to look at it in such a intensive manner?
Like most people, I think I was dimly aware of Kitty Genovese as a victim of a notorious crime a long time ago. Wasn't she the one who died while her neighbors were looking out their windows while somebody stabbed her to death? I realized that we were coming up on 50 years, which seemed remarkable, since that happened. It was an amazing time in America and in New York City. And so I was interested enough to start looking into the case. There has been an undertow of opinion growing over the years that the original story told by the New York Times wasn't quite accurate, that it wasn't a situation in which there were 38 people looking out their windows watching a girl be killed. It was much cloudier and more confusing and ultimately more interesting than that.
We heard so often about that bystander effect. It is one of the things that has lingered in this case for the past five decades. What do you think got that started and ultimately allowed it to take on a life of its own?
Well, the crime wasn't treated as anything special initially. There were 600-some crimes in New York City that year. The story was treated as yet another murder, more sensationally in the tabloids, four paragraphs worth in the New York Times on the inside. But then, 10 days after the crime, the editor, the new city editor of the New York Times, A.M. Rosenthal, had lunch with the police chief. And Police Chief Murphy told him, that story out in Queens, that's really one for the books. 38 witnesses. And it was that number that interested Rosenthal and ultimately his readers and people all over the country and all over the world. The fact that there could be so many, and they knew exactly how many, 38. How could that happen? And the story as it appeared in the Times on the front page suddenly was that 38 law-abiding citizens of Queens watched a killer stalk and stab a defenseless woman over the course of half an hour. It didn't happen that way, but that's the story that stuck.
What do we know for sure?
We know that Kitty Genovese, who worked in a bar, had finished up her work at 3 a.m. on March 13th, 50 years ago. She drove home. She parked her car in front of the apartment building where she lived with her partner and was walking across the sidewalk when a monster jumped out of the dark, a man with a knife. His name was Winston Mosley. He stabbed her in the back, and she screamed for help. Now, at that point, she screams loudly enough that lights are popping up on both sides of the street, windows illuminated. People are starting to come groggily to their windows. One of them lifts his window and yells out, "Leave that girl alone." Well, that sends the attacker away, and Kitty, now alone on the sidewalk, bravely staggers, struggles her way around a corner of a drugstore to where she's in the darkness. She's not visible anymore from the street. And she finally seeks refuge in an entryway, and after suddenly people look out their windows, well, there's nothing to see, they're used to hearing screams in the middle of the night. There's a bar and there's a lot of fights there in that neighborhood. He waits until the coast is clear and he wants to kill someone that night. He resumes the attack where practically no one can see.
And we get that right, right? I mean, it was Winston Mosley. There is no question about that.
That's right. He was convicted. He was sentenced to death, overturned on appeal, which enabled him to escape from prison and go on a crime spree 4 years after this killing.
27 years old, Kitty Genovese is killed, and what you look at is her life and of course her murder. It is a complicated story when you talk about her life and ultimately the position she put herself in that night.
Well, the position she put herself in was nothing but going home from work, as she did all the time in a neighborhood that's relatively crime-free. People leave their doors unlocked at night. People leave their cars unlocked at night. She was very fond of her little red Fiat. She took a few moments to lock it, which may have slowed her chances of getting away. But all she was doing was going home from work, as she did almost every night, and was attacked randomly, a real urban nightmare, just you're crossing the sidewalk when somebody comes out of the darkness and stabs you.
It is 3 in the morning, however, and it is, it's a time where you don't know what is out there, obviously, because it's dark and you can't see. So, which brings you to the point of again, this bystander effect, and ultimately what you discover is that many people couldn't see it, as you just mentioned, but others, there was help involved in this.
There was that initial, the man who shouted out, and eventually there was a woman who was heroic, I believe. This story was that came to represent the heartlessness of people who lived in the big city. Actually, the story was supposed to be that she was abandoned by all of her neighbors as she died. In fact, there was a neighbor, 4'11" Sophie Farrar, who came running down the stairs as soon as the man at the top of the stairs finally made a phone call, oh, Kitty's being attacked. Sophie Farrar ran down, and for all she knew, the murderer is still there. The knife is still being wielded, and she could be running into an attack herself. But Sophie ran to her friend's side and was actually cradling Kitty as Kitty died. That's another thing that wasn't reported at the time.
One of the things that is fascinating about the story is the impact that it had. Obviously, this is something that brought great criminal justice reforms. It even brought the 911 system into being.
It did, more or less directly. I mean, it was an outgrowth of this crime, the concern, why is it hard to call the police? What you had to do in 1964 was look either on your refrigerator, where you may have posted it, on the phone book, where the local police number, different for every borough in New York, was different for every town across the country. And then when you called, you'd get a communications officer, or you might get a desk sergeant. You might get somebody who said, "Well, we're the police. Why don't you mind your own business? Or if you don't like this neighborhood, why don't you move out?" People are screaming all the time in the middle of the night. And also when you called the police at that time, you had to immediately identify yourself. One of the things that I think helps make 911 work as often as it does is the anonymity. All they want to know is where's the emergency, and they can get a car out there. One of the tragedies of the Kitty Genovese story is that after all the delay, after the man at the top of the stairs finally decided he's going to call the police, there was a police car there in 2 minutes, but it was too late to save Kitty.
When you think of the impact that it has had over 50 years and the great controversy and discussion that has taken place, why do you think that the story that you write about in this book was lost in all of that?
Well, I think it wasn't known. I think the complicated facts of the matter were not fully known and have not been fully known.
What makes that complicated?
Well, the mere fact that people were confused, that that it wasn't a matter of looking out your window and seeing what occurred, because depending on how quickly you got to your window, you see a woman by herself, or you see a man run away, and then a woman walks around the corner, or you see nothing. But you had heard screams on a block where people yelled at the top of their lungs sometimes in the middle of the night. To me, there are actually more than 38 ear witnesses and eyewitnesses, and at least 38 or more different stories that happened that night. Some could certainly have intervened and helped Kitty and did not. Some did not have much of an idea of what was going on. So I think the complexity of it is probably a reason that that the simpler story is what is remembered today, the idea that 38 people looked out their windows and watched Kitty be stabbed.
At the time, how was the woman who had Kitty die in her arms, how was she represented in the story at the time?
She was not. She testified. She said, I knew she testified in Winston Mosley's trial as a friend, briefly to say simply that that she knew Kitty and was one of the neighbors. But what I consider to be the heroic action of Sophie was not part of the narrative at all. It didn't fit the idea that the heartless people living in the big city were not going to come to your aid. What fit that narrative, and I think made people accept and believe the story for 50 years, is that idea that the city had dehumanized us, and we were the kind of people who would not help a neighbor.
Was it part of the crime report? Was she giving a statement at the time?
Sophie Farrar told the police what had happened, but by the time the news stories were out, the news stories didn't focus on the actions of Sophie individually. The news stories were mostly about the number 38, which did come from the police, and the fact that a lot of people had indeed heard screams that night, as they sure did.
I do want to ask you about that number 38. You mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation. Why that number? Why so specific, and why so quickly? I mean, it wasn't through an intensive investigation that we came to that number. It was almost instantly we came to that number.
Well, it was 10 days before that number enters the picture, because the crime was reported as ordinarily, you know, crimes were, one of 600 crimes in New York City that year, reported to the tune of four paragraphs right after the crime in the New York Times. A little bit of play, always on the inside of the newspapers, of other newspapers. It was not front page news for 2 weeks after the crime, and that was because 10 days after it happened, the editor of the new Metropolitan editor of the Times, A.M. Rosenthal, had lunch with the police chief, and the police chief wanted to change the subject at one point and said, you know, the big story is that one out in Queens. That's one for the books, 38 witnesses. Mm. And the very specificity of that number, I think, is what made people remember the story the way that they did.
But here again, I go back to the police report. In that original police report, was it that number, 38, mentioned?
That's been a mystery for a long time. Why did Murphy, the chief, tell him, the editor, that exact number, 38? There, some people thought it was 33. Some people thought it was more than 38. And it has been unknown where that number came from. I believe I found the number, the source of it, in a document that was just a few days along into this case. It's a roundup of the investigation, the interviews that detectives had with the neighbors. Not all of the neighbors, but a great many of the neighbors. And I was puzzled by it at first, because you go down counting. You know, this person in this apartment said this. Next door person said that. There are apparently 49 people who heard or saw something, but there are 38 entries on it, some representing two or three people living in the same apartment and situations like that. Count up the 38 entries. I think that it's likely that some civil servant did that, and that's how Murphy got the number. He gave it to Rosenthal, and it entered American history from there.
Subtitle of the book is The Murder of the Bystanders, The Crime That Changed America. So 50 years later, where do you think we are as the impact of this case continues to exist?
I think it's still being interpreted and misinterpreted and reinterpreted. I think one of the outcomes certainly is positive, the 911 system that probably saved lives. That's no consolation to Kitty Genovese. But it is an outcome that must be considered positive. I think it's much easier to get help today. The understanding of the bystander effect, which is a real thing, you're probably in trouble if there are 20 people watching you be attacked, because they may all expect somebody else, one of them, to be stronger or braver, and they wait and tend not to act. Whereas if it's two or three, they know if it's not me, then this person isn't going to get help. Good Samaritan laws across the country date back to a push that came from this case. So it's strange, I think, not only a notorious crime, but one of the most misunderstood crimes in recent history.
The name of the book, Kitty Genovese, The Murder of the Bystanders, The Crime That Changed America. It is published by Norton. Kevin Cook, thank you very much for joining us on this anniversary. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed our talk.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Kitty Genovese. It is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.